Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Tan Murthy, international top-ranking business and technology leader, industry-leading visionary innovator, outstanding global executive, vice president and head of research and education, Infosys Technologies Limited. Tan, you have a lifetime of outstanding contributions in a number of fields. Thank you for sharing your considerable expertise, deep accumulated insights, and wisdom with our audience.
Stephen, thank you very much for the opportunity to engage in a discussion with you. I really appreciate the opportunity to share some of my thoughts.
You know, Tan, you have this amazing background, and it's been such a pleasure to work with you on this sort of committee that we're on together. And I want you to sort of build out on this background and tell us more about, for example, Infosys, its roots, vision, and mission.
Sure. So Infosys was founded in 1981 by seven software professionals who got together with the idea of building a firm to earn global respect. The story of Infosys is written about in many places, but very briefly, it started with these seven people coming together and starting the firm with $250 that they borrowed from their wives. And from that humble beginning to close the last financial year, which was on March 31st of 2009, with a revenue of over $4.1 billion, is quite a journey that the company has had. And the vision of the company is to be a globally respected corporation that provides best-in-class business solutions, leveraging technology with the best-in-class people. So that has always been the approach of the firm. And I think the tagline, powered by intellect, driven by values, gives you an indication of the emphasis the firm places on human capital and ethical behavior. So that, in a nutshell, kind of gives you a description of Infosys and the vision.
Well, it's an amazing company, and I know that it's won a number of global awards and is very much recognized as being a leader and just an innovation and providing services throughout the world. So it's a remarkable journey. So what triggered your interest in computing, and please profile your journey up to the present?
My first opportunity to work on a computer came during the final year of my engineering degree, and that was in way back in 1984. This was the time when I was doing actually my engineering in electronics, but my final year project turned out to be something where I was creating a translator using assembly language. And so that was my first interaction with a computer. And from then on, I've always been associated with computing, and I've been an IT professional since 1985. Now, I started my journey working as a programmer in different operating systems, DOS, of course, at that time, CPM, multiple flavors of Unix, working with multiple programming languages to C was the primary language I started with. I did some programming in assembly language as well. So there has always been a lot of interaction on the operating system sides of the computer that I was engaged in for the first few years of my career, and that was very fascinating and a great learning for me. And then I moved on to application development when Microsoft Windows became the popular tool for creating graphical user interface-based applications. From there on, I went on to work on applications using the internet and creating business applications leveraging the internet. So I got an opportunity to work on both sides, on what used to be called the system side, the operating system, internals of operating system, and I worked on the kernel of a relational database and so forth, and from there on to work on business applications for large financial, retail, and manufacturing clients. A good part of this was done when I was in Silicon Valley for about 10 plus years, and that gave me an opportunity to know a lot about what was going on in the computing field, almost from where it got generated in the Silicon Valley. So my journey has always been with this, and from there on I went on to managing teams, developing people, because I realized that to be successful in this area, one critical thing was competency, and competency that you had to gain every day. And therefore, a focused effort on competency is something that I am now working on as the head of education and research at Infosys.
Well, that's a really fascinating background, and I can see that you've been doing this all of your life. Did you, or were you interested in sort of this whole science area then, even as a young man, like before you went to university?
Yes, so I was good at math and science when I was in school. And so I had this fascination to know what you can do with this basic knowledge of these two fields. And so that fascination continued, and which is why I jumped on the first opportunity I got to work on computers. And then when I got to work with assembly language programming and operating systems, I enjoyed the most, because that was when all of my knowledge was put to use, and more importantly, got to learn quite a few things.
You know, you mentioned now that you're vice president and head of research and education at Infosys Technologies, and, you know, I'd like to know more about that then, you know, like tell us about your vision and the objectives behind your current roles, and then what you hope to accomplish and how you will bring this about.
So in the current role, my job is to build the capability of people, and so we are a 100,000 plus organization today. And we work with clients in solving business problems leveraging technology. So this means that the competency of our people has to be quite varied, ranging from deep technology through business domain, software processes, and of course good, what we call as soft skills. So my focus is on developing the competencies of people along all of these four dimensions, and the range of people that we cover starts with the ones that are still in engineering school, because we engage with engineering colleges in India, raising the competencies of people there and making them ready to join the corporate world, and then get into the people that join us as fresh grads, for whom we conduct a 18-week residential program, where we help them make the transformation from their campus to the corporate world, and the continuous education for people who have had more than 1 year of experience, giving them various interventions that will help them be successful in delighting our clients. So that's the that's at the highest level the profile of the role and the responsibility that I have. Now, the vision is for us to become the global best for IT-related education in this field, in my role. And the way we want to go about doing it is, I know it's a tall order, because to be the global best, you have to know and benchmark yourself with a lot of the globally best, and globally best not only in the corporate world but in the academic world as well. So our idea is to benchmark ourselves with the globally best outside in any sphere who are conducting education, and then bring the best of that to IT and IT-related education for the corporate world with an emphasis.
Well, that's an amazing mandate, and I can see that this will happen, especially with your leadership. So how do you see the global economic climate in 2009-10 and the next 5 years?
I think as rational behavior comes back, we will see the economy also shaping up and getting better. That's my personal view. And I think as we go along, we will see the economic conditions become better. But I think it will also mean that there will be a clear indication of the global interdependence, because the economic crisis already has proven that we are a globalized world, and I see the global interdependence happening more and more, because for the economy to grow, I think there will have to be much more of a free movement of goods, services, and people, and I think that is what will facilitate the growth of the economy over the coming years.
I guess even with the world economic challenges, and especially in the West, in Asia, there still is growth. I know that China is still growing at about 6%. And is India somewhere around 3 or 4%, something like that?
I think the prediction for this year is in the same range that you mentioned for China. It's about the 6 to 7% range is expected growth for the year. So yes, there is growth because there is activity happening in multiple spheres.
You know, you mentioned the different set of parameters and the different areas that Infosys is involved with. So what metrics are important to Infosys in the next 3 years?
Well, like any corporation, I think there are the financial metrics, but more importantly for Infosys, I think it is about earning the respect of all its stakeholders. And that's what Infosys always places the most emphasis on. And when I say stakeholders, it is the, of course, the clients, the employees, the governments of the land that we operate in, and the society at large, and the vendor partners. So earning the respect and measuring us by how our stakeholders treat us, I think, is the key metric that Infosys always goes for.
You know, Infosys has won a number of awards and has received a lot of global recognition. And based on that background and experience, I'd be interested to see what other organizations must do to be successful.
I think a relentless focus on clients, on innovation, on employees are all very important. And I think it's also important to look at the larger picture and look at strategy holistically to address the needs of all the stakeholders for a long time. So sustainability is another thing that I think organizations will have to focus on. I also think that bringing in transparency in governance will be a critical thing for organizations to be successful.
Again, you're sort of at the center of what is happening in the world today in terms of technology. So what are the hot technologies today and into the future?
I think cloud computing, for example, is something that's at the center of a lot of things today. But at the core of it, I think technologies that will be hot will be ones that are classified as two types. One that will help the planet to be a better place, so what I would call as green technologies, I think will become hotter. And the other is technologies that help bring a better living standard to the larger base of humanity. So, for example, combining, say, the innovations in computing with the innovations in communication technology can perhaps create solutions for people who are illiterate but know how to use a phone. And therefore, even without the ability to read and write, perhaps they may be able to get all the benefits of an internet. So that's an example of things that I think can happen in the future, and those I think would be hot technologies for the future.
So let's see if we can do a bit of a shift. If those are the hot technologies, then what do you see as the hot jobs today and into the future?
You know, in the developing world, at least, I see a lot of the hot jobs coming in various sectors. You know, it is in the finance, in insurance, in transport, in retail. So a lot of it, I think, is on the services sector that there are the hot jobs that are being created, because as the ability of people to buy and the consumption rates of goods and services increase, the ability to provide them a better experience, I think, is what will rule the world. And therefore, that is where service-oriented jobs I see as becoming more and more prevalent in the developing markets.
In terms of technology, do you see any particular areas that, for example, let's say I'm an IT professional and I'm sort of very early in my career, where should I be focusing on?
I think as an IT professional, one should of course, know the essence of how computing works, because I think, you know, while in today's world one might think of computing and applications as putting together an application, I think it's important for an IT professional first to understand how the technology operates, and at the same time begin to understand how to make a difference to the business with the technology. So therefore, my recommendation would always be for people to focus on the business domain and the application of, and the leverage of technology to solve the business problem. And both of those, in my mind, are important.
That's interesting. It sounds like then you're an advocate of having good business skills and core industry knowledge, having a service-oriented attitude and deep interpersonal skills plus technical competencies.
Yes, and you know, in fact, that is kind of a summary of the four dimensions of competency that we focus on in developing for our people. So yeah, you're absolutely right.
So, you know, Tan, you talked about the hot jobs that are available today and sort of some of the skill sets that IT professionals should have. Now, what are the types of hot companies today and into the future?
I think the hot companies, you know, we may not even have seen them yet, but they are the ones that are probably innovating and creating solutions of the future. And if you look at the future, like I said, I think there would be those two types that work on making the planet a better place. So the companies that work on the green technologies and the companies that combine innovation to take their products and services to the masses. So, you know, we already have a lot of data, for example, and unless that data can be converted to information, and a company that does that well, I think will be a hot company. Similar is the case with the companies that take, like I said earlier, the computing technology and the communication technology and create solutions for the masses. So the hot companies, I think, would be the ones that are working on innovation, combining existing products and creating new services and products for a better place to be.
You know, Tan, you were invited to a private leaders meeting in Chicago earlier this year, and this was due to your global work and outstanding leadership. And you talked about Friedman's book, the Asia region, India's graduation rate for engineers, and much more. Can you share these deep and valuable insights with our audience?
I think over the last several years, many things have happened across the globe, and we see that as a flattening of the world, and we call it as a flattening of the world because it has essentially removed barriers for people to operate from. And some of the things that have happened are the demographic divide, which is that now the markets have shifted because of the demography into people that buy these products and services are at a different age group than the ones that were there before. The second is the emerging markets, which is, again, I think the markets have shifted from the West to a developing world where the ability to buy things has increased. The third shift has come about because of technology, because now with technology, the difference in information has reduced, because wherever information is produced, the recipient of that information, irrespective of where they are, can have access to the same information. So there is no longer an opportunity to create a divide based on the knowledge difference. So that now has led to the flattening of the world. And the fourth is, of course, the change in regulations, because regulations have also played a role in ensuring that there is a level playing field created. So the emerging markets, the demographic shift, the ubiquitousness of technology and regulation, we see as things that have enabled anybody anywhere in the world to have almost the same level playing field to do what they want. So that's the shift that I was talking to you about. In terms of India, India's population, and a large part of India's population, it's expected that by, I think, 2015, over 50% of the people will be in the 15 to 50 year range, which means it's a very young population that also gives the opportunity for the country to have a good growth rate. And that means that you need to have an educated population, because they are going to be in the workforce, that you need to have people who are educated and skilled to do that. The education system in India has a long history, and focus on higher education has been placed since the time of India's independence in 1947. And now there are over 400,000 engineering, actually more than 1,700 engineering colleges that create over 400,000 engineers every year. And however, the what we find through some surveys is that not more than 30% of them are employable. And when I say employable, it is the ability to get a job at the campus by the time they complete their education for a job that fits their education. So it's not that everybody else is unemployed, but getting a job that fits the skill set of the individual is where we look at employability. And so that number is still not very high. And that is where the challenge of improving the education system to make the output of the education system that is something useful for the corporate world is required. And that is where companies like Infosys are playing a big part in helping make the transition. So the Campus Connect program I mentioned earlier, where we are engaged with engineering schools, is an example of an initiative that a company like ours is doing to raise that level of employability of people.
Well, you have over, what, 1 million square feet devoted to training, and how many faculty members teach there?
So at the campus that, program that we call as the foundation program where the fresh engineers come out of school, this is at a place called Mysore, which is about 80 miles south of Bangalore. And I'm mentioning that because most people perhaps know Bangalore than Mysore. And so that is a place where we have more than 1 million square feet of education space, and we have more than a staff of 400 people dedicated to education and research within Infosys for the primary purpose of raising the competency of our people.
You know, Thomas Friedman, you know, he wrote that bestseller, The World is Flat, but he was inspired when he visited your headquarters. Can you tell us more about that?
I think, like he mentioned in his book, the conversation he was having with our co-chairman, Mr. Nandan Neelakani, when he was being taken on a campus tour, and he was looking at one of the conference rooms in the company where we have 21 screens for us to have a conversation with our colleagues across the globe. Looking at the flat screen is where the conversation began, and that is where I think the term The Flat World and his book emerged from.
It's really an amazing story. So, you know, we have this situation, you know, the world is changing, the demographics are changing, technology is being very innovative and so on. You know, where are the global leaders in the future and why?
With the flattening world, the global leaders of the future can come from any part of the globe, really. And I'm sure the future leaders are going through school right now in some remote place, in some remote country, perhaps. And therefore, since the opportunity today exists for anybody to reach to the top, if they have the passion to do it, the global leaders could come from anywhere. I mean, I don't think it's going to be the realm of only a few countries to produce the global leaders anymore.
You know, with so many years of success in your career, how does this success that you've had contribute to your vision for business and industry, governments and academia, research, media, society, technology, and internationally?
I think the future belongs to those that are able to make a large difference to humanity as a whole. And therefore, to me, the vision of the future would be one where anybody, irrespective of their background, is able to reach their full potential in any place on the planet by virtue of their desire to be successful, by virtue of the passion they have to be successful, and the opportunities that the world provides for them. So towards that, I think all of the stakeholders will have to work together to facilitate that. I think it also would mean a place where there is a lot of transparency in what is happening so that anybody will have visibility, whether it is within the government, whether it is the industry, to look at what is going on and make a rational decision. I also think that governance will play a big role in the future. Governance that is accompanied with accountability and transparency. And that, I think, is important from the education area as well, because accountability in education is something that will, I think, happen in the future, where the purpose of education is served, either with the student being able to pursue higher education in the pursuit of knowledge, or be able to get a job suitable to his or her competencies learned from the education system. So overall, I think it will be about bringing about changes that help people to reach their potential, see a lot of governance, accountability, and transparency that will make it a better place.
You know, Tan, as I indicated earlier, you've had this amazing career. And so what were the major challenges you faced during your career? How did you overcome them? And what challenges still exist today? And can you outline others that are new?
I think the one of the challenges coming from a very technical background and a focus on technology for me was not realizing the importance of communication. Early part of my career, I had an occasion where we were not able to win a deal in spite of us having provided a good technical solution. And that was the moment when, through the conversation with this client, that I was able to realize the need for competence having a combination of content and communication. So that was the early years where the need for recognizing communication as a critical component to be successful and facing that was important. And I went through that and overcame that by an effort to enhance my own capabilities, working with people, choosing to get mentored by the best people. And ultimately, when I had the opportunity to present on the same platform as the CEO of a large Fortune 100 company, that's when I realized that I was able to at least overcome my deficiencies in communication. So that was the early years. Now I think the challenge is to keep pace with everything that is going on in the world, to ensure that anything that we do at any point in time is relevant, to ensure that whatever is being done adds value to the stakeholders. So therefore, keeping up and keeping speed with the changes in the world is a very critical need. And so that is a challenge that needs to be faced. And so I try to do that by, of course, reading, by networking with people, by ensuring that I have communications with various types of people that help me understand various perspectives. So the challenge is in some sense, an information overload, but more importantly, the need to add value to various stakeholders constantly to ensure that I stay relevant.
Those are really valuable lessons and really a great sort of list of attributes that people have to take on and skills that they have to take on. You know, since you have such a prominent role in Infosys, what are the most important lessons that you want to share from this work at Infosys?
I think Infosys has been a great platform of learning. And some of the things that I've learned and have kind of got reemphasized for me being here is first the value placed on the human being. Acknowledging every person as a human being that has something to contribute is a very important thing for one to remember at all times, whether it is a client, a manager, a peer, or a team member. First, to give respect to the individual as a human being is the starting point. From there on, I think it has also been about, we have a saying at Infosys, which is the softest pillow is a clear conscience. So that is an important lesson in understanding to deal with everything ethically and legally so that one doesn't have to worry about the a bad consequence. Third is the focus on making decisions through data and information rather than through a very subjective mechanism, which sometimes happens in a lot of situations. So here, in fact, we have a saying again that says, in God we trust, everybody else brings the data. So looking at every transaction from the perspective of what data is involved in making a decision, I think it's a very important lesson for one to know and practice. Fourth is to focus on building scale through systems and processes, ensuring that we are able to do everything in a large scale given the needs that we have always had, both in the company and in the country. So those, I would say, are some of the critical lessons that I would share.
You've had many amazing achievements throughout your life, and can you describe some of these top innovative solutions in terms of the things that you're trying to solve, your particular solutions that you came up with, and the impact it's going to have today and into the future?
I can talk of something very recent where, you know, I told you about the education system, higher education system in India, and the low level of, or the low numbers of people who have employability. So what we did as an starting experiment or pilot last year was to engage with some people, some of the students in colleges, engineering schools in India, through an e-learning mechanism for them to learn things between the time they got a job offer and they took on a job. With the intent that they learned some things, not so much for us to be able to reduce the amount of training we give for them, but more importantly for them to be engaged, work in groups, understand the use of technology, and come up to speed on certain things so that they are at the same level as some of the peers that might come from urban schools. So this we did for people who were in remote parts of the country to engage them in this kind of learning. The impact of that really has been not only in the ability to engage people that were so far off, but more importantly for them to realize the impact of working together in teams where teams are distributed and where they're not all in the same room. And we see this as a mechanism for us to take it to a larger number of students and schools in India. Second is taking some of the education that the learnings we have had in educating our own people and making it a combination of videos of lectures of our people, combining that with conceptual knowledge, problems related to the addressing of a concept and so forth, packaging them in a way that people can use it wherever they are, irrespective of whether they are a part of the organization or not, or some of the things that we've been trying to do to enhance the reach and more importantly to raise the ability of people, because that we think is critical for somebody to be successful. So those are some of the examples of recent experiments and pilots that we've been doing.
Ken, can you profile your current research and work, its challenges and opportunities and implications?
We're looking at, research in the education and research area has been directed towards two things. One is research in understanding things that are coming, so grid computing, cloud computing, some of those areas and challenges related to that, and learning about them so that we are in a position to enable more and more people to use those technologies as they become prevalent. So we partner with good academic institutions in conducting that research. The second area of research is in enhancing learning effectiveness, and there it is about in the corporate context, more importantly, and therefore there it is about understanding where learning can make a difference, how learning can make the difference, and what are the business parameters that can be impacted through learning interventions. And again, there it is research jointly done with academic institutions to create the correlation between competency and output both for the client and the organization, along with the impact it has for an individual. So these are the two broad areas of research, and I think the impact of those will be far-fetched over a period of time, because it can make a difference in our ability to raise the capability of people and also how we go about doing that.
Well, that's really fascinating. You know, one of the other things is that you've had a long and distinguished career, and you've learned many lessons, and you've shared some of them already. Can you share additional ones that you want to tell to our broad audience?
I can talk of a few things that have helped me in my career. One is, I think, the first requirement for one to be successful is to have a passion and a commitment for the job. It doesn't matter what the job is or what the role is. I think one has to be very passionate, and having signed up to do something, one has to demonstrate commitment by going above and beyond and getting the job done, and getting the job done very well, because that, I think, is a reflection of the personal integrity of the individual and also will get reflected in the output that is done. So therefore, that to me is a critical component. Second, I think, is the need to connect with people and treat them with respect. Understanding where somebody is coming from, understanding the context of the individual is very essential in being able to connect with people. And I think that helps in building relationships and goes a long way in becoming successful. Because a lot of times, and almost every time, I think, things get done in teams and not as individuals. And so for things to be effective, one has to know first how to work well in teams. And for that, one has to be genuinely interested in the other person and have the ability to empathize and learn the context of the individual. Third, I think the need to constantly develop the confidence of one's own capabilities, while at the same time having the humility to know that there are areas one doesn't know, and have the ability to go in and learn the new things all the time, because that, I think, is critical in ensuring that one is able to do what is required of an individual, and therefore the humility to learn new things is very, very, very important. The fourth, I think, is to look at things from the perspective of the making a difference and making a large difference, rather than what is in it for me. It has to be about what is in it for the larger good in approaching any problem and approaching and defining a solution. So those are some of the things, I think, that have stood me well, and I think those are useful to know.
And you wrote a notable article on, and it was entitled Take on the World, and it really sums up some really, fascinating and really essential tips. So if you could sum up your life experiences with career tips for the IT professional, what would be your tips and the reasons behind them?
I think the first one I would say is to develop deep competencies, because it's critical for one to have to be competent to take on any job. And therefore, especially in the field of IT, where things change so fast, one has to develop the competencies in the area one is working on. And that, I think, is the starting point. The second is the ability to develop soft skills and communicate. Like I said, from my own experience, I realized that content by itself doesn't serve a purpose unless it is brought to bear, and that can only happen if there are good communication skills that go with it. The third thing is an attitude of wanting to learn, the attitude of wanting to work well in teams, the attitude of wanting to be successful together, because in this day and age, like I said earlier, nothing gets done by a single individual. One, I think, in this context is a very small number. Therefore, the ability to work well in teams, understanding the big picture, is very, very essential, especially in the IT field, because when you are solving a problem through IT, the person defining the problem could be in one part of the world, the person designing the solution to the problem could be someplace else, and the person developing the solution could be in a third place. And therefore, the ability to understand the big picture and work well in teams is very critical for an IT professional to be successful.
So if we were to extend that, can you profile what is needed for IT professionals to be successful in today's agile technology-driven climate?
I think some of these still apply, especially the competencies and working well in teams, and of course, again, communication. All of those still apply. In addition, I think the ability to adapt and work well in an environment where everything is not well defined is another important thing that will be important in the agile world, because if one is to do the analysis of what needs to be done, then one can easily get into the analysis paralysis syndrome and will never be successful in the agile world. So the ability to quickly adapt, make the assumptions, take risks, and move on with the ability to come back and make changes fast enough would be a critical thing that one has to adopt to.
Tan, as a global leader, you're ideally situated to answer this question, and that is, if you can make predictions for the future, their implications, and how business executives and IT professionals can best prepare.
I think the starting point is to have an open mind and not be constrained by one's experiences or one's own view of the world. So the starting point to me is always to go into a conversation, go into a situation, and develop this constant ability to let go and learn new. I think that would be the key thing to me that will help anybody be successful. And beyond that, I think it is about some of the things I said earlier, which is the desire to learn, the humility to acknowledge that one doesn't know something, and the most importantly, the focus on a value system. It is really about the thing on realizing that the softest pillow is a clear conscience. I think those are some of the things that would help the professionals of the future.
How do you wish to continue to shape the world and contribute to the fabric of history?
I think it is by working with people that we can jointly make a difference. I think by learning new things, by adapting things that were done in one context and bringing into play in a different context, I think also by making sure that there is an opportunity for people at various stages to learn from and give people the opportunities to perform to their best. I think if we get more and more people to be successful in the world will be a different place.
What do you see as the three top challenges facing us today, and how do you propose they be solved?
I think one of the challenges that is clearly evident from the what we're going through now and the economic side is the need for here and now. I think it's important to realize and look at things from a holistic perspective and from a long-term perspective. Therefore, education of a value system is a critical need, and I think that has to be taught and practiced at various forums, and that I think is the most critical thing in today's world. The second, I think, is to learn to be more and more transparent. While that is partly related to what I said of the first one, but more importantly, an idea of sharing and idea of being able to open up and be vulnerable through transparency, I think, is an important trait that we'll have to develop. The third, I think, is about the focus on deepening one's own ability and skills. Believing in one's own capabilities and then deepening one's skills is something that is perhaps not happening as much because, again, perhaps from the here and now attitude or from the ability to access what are low-hanging fruits, the focus might not be there as much on deepening one's skills. And so deepening skills is an important thing that has to happen over a period of time for things to be different.
Well, we're going to do a bit of a shift now, and we're going to talk about IT as a profession. So you know, increasingly there's attention being given to IT as a profession with recognized professional certification, adherence to a code of ethics, demonstrated professional development, alignment with a common body of knowledge and best practices. And these concepts are encapsulated in IT professionalism. Can you share your views on IT professionalism?
I think it is time for IT to be looked at as a profession, and especially in terms of embodying all of those aspects that you just talked about. Using the common body of knowledge, for example, is the approach that we have been taking as well in bringing about certification. When I talked to you earlier about the continuous competency development for our people, one of the things that we do is to ensure that every individual who is engaged in client services goes through a certification program, and it is very tightly linked to the progression of the individual and the compensation of the individual. So that's the importance that we place on certification and common knowledge. As an organization, we've always placed a high emphasis on ethics and the value system. And so embodying all of this and bringing about the IT as a profession, I think, is timely and needed at this point in time, as we see the number of people engaging and entering the IT profession becoming more and more.
You know, we are at an historical inflection point in terms of IT professionalism, in that you have this UN-founded International Federation for Information Processing, or IFIP, which is launching their, what they call their IP3 program this year, and that's the International Professional Practice Partnership Program. And what it'll do, it'll speak to IT as a recognized profession with global standards, profession-based code of ethics, and widely adopted professional certification, all happening this year. Can you provide your comments on the importance of this historical milestone?
I think that's a great initiative, and I think that has to be embraced wholeheartedly in making it happen across the globe, especially with IT being among the professions that is practiced in some sense interchangeably across the globe, because people travel for IT much more, I guess, than any other profession. And therefore, having this uniform certification and a global standard for IT professionalism is commendable, and I think that's what we should look at.
We're at the end of our interview, and I now turn the tables and I say, if you were doing this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
Stephen, I think you're great, and you've done a great job of asking me everything that I know. So it's been a great interview. I think we've covered every aspect of things in what we have talked about here. The only thing that I think I did not talk about was the need to place an emphasis on execution and having a bias for action as something that every professional needs to have, that I think we didn't talk about. But other than that, I think we've covered everything in this conversation.
Well, Tan, you know, we are indeed fortunate to have somebody of your stature and your experience come in today. And I know your schedule is very demanding. So I thank you for coming in to do this interview. And again, thank you for sharing your substantial wisdom with our audience.
It is my pleasure entirely, Stephen, and thank you very much for this opportunity. I look forward to working with you more.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Tan Murthy, international top-ranking business and technology leader, industry-leading visionary innovator, outstanding global executive, vice president, head of research and education, Infosys Technologies Limited.